Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
And Arkansas, there may be some other people. From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of August, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Pete Manhart. He's in for Kirk Kimmel, both from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll take a look at the agricultural cash grain markets with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County and discuss the weather forecast, too. That with the guys at Earth Risk Technologies. They're in Chicago, Illinois, and we'll do it all during this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look now at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Monday afternoon. Futures like this in the grains pit. September corn futures at 366.5 or down 4.5 cents for the day. December at 376.5, down 4.75. And the March contract down 4.75 as well at 387.25. July futures 399, down 4.5 cents for the day. That all in the corn pit. Soy complex now. Bean futures for the afternoon nearby at 977.5, down 3.25. September at 9.45, down 8.25. In November at 9.35.5, 4.75 cents lower. January futures at 9.41, down 4.75. In the May, down 4 cents at 9.36.75. And July of next year, down 3 cents at 9.40.5. Bean meal in the August at 351.40, down 3.20. September down 2.40. Bean oil down 13 cents at 29.85 for the day. Wheat futures September contract 2 cents or a quarter cent lower at 4.99. July futures of next year at 5.18.75, up a penny and 3/4. The hard red September at 4.89, down 3.25. December at 5.08.75, down 3.25 for the day. From the livestock, CME live cattle futures in the August contract at 147.92.5, up $2.22.5. August feeder at 214.15, $3.42.5 higher at this hour. And lean hogs, $1.40 higher at $79.90. Once again, that's up 140. You, of course, are listening to WILLAG.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Let's take a look at the rest of the numbers as they're trading in Chicago at this hour. From the energies, nearby crude oil for the day is down $1.83 at September at $45.29. August ethanol at $1.48.1, that's 2.4 cents lower, and the gasoline at $1.67.8 is down 9.3 cents. Heating oil for the day at $1.53.3, 5.5 cents lower, and the natural gas on the afternoon is trading up 3.5 cents at $2.75.1. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,440, down 174 points. The dollar down, or rather up 0.17 at 97.61. And gold futures for the day at $1,085.25 per troy ounce, down $9.45. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 86 degrees. West-northwest winds at about 10 miles an hour. Tonight, clear, a low of 61. Northwest winds at 5 to 7. Tuesday, sunny skies and 81. Tuesday evening, cloudy and 63. And Wednesday, a 50% chance of showers or thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy and 79 degrees. Wednesday evening, showers, possibly a thunderstorm, mostly cloudy and a low of 64. Chance of rainfall on Wednesday night set at 60%. Thursday, a 50% chance of rainfall during the day, mostly cloudy and a high of 77. Mostly cloudy on Thursday evening and 60. And by the time we get to Friday, sunny skies and 76. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. We'll talk with the folks at Earth Risk Technologies.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Let's turn our attention directly to the marketplace on this third day of August, the very first trading day of the month, to Pete Manhart. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Thanks for being with us, Pete.
Thanks for having us.
Well, let's first go through the last month. It was kind of ugly as it wrapped up. Were there anything really of importance at the end of the month that we need to take up and consider as we move forward through the month of August?
Well, we dropped back 80% of what we'd gained. In 3 weeks, we gained a lot. And then in 10 days, we dropped all of it almost off. Today, we backed up some more, but we did show plus signs part of the day. So maybe new life on worries about the crop size and the worries about the China's able ability to buy.
And what are your expectations for the rest of this week in the trade and maybe for crop progress reports this afternoon?
I expect the crop progress to be up a hair, maybe a point. Expect the trade to be sideways, down a little, up a little, like it was today. I mean, beans were down 14 to up 2, closed down 4 to 5. Corn was, I think, might have got to unchanged after being down 6, but it backed off to that. With a half hour to go, we were to the plus side on beans and only down 1 on corn. So I do expect it to be kind of sideways until we find out more information about the crop size.
And what are you hearing from producers that call in and talk to you, and how much does it differ from one side, and I'm sure it does, of the Corn Belt to the other?
Western Corn Belt in general is in good shape, west and north, and the Eastern Corn Belt's in sad shape in the south. You go from Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, there's some really rotten stuff. You go to Minnesota, the Dakotas, parts of Iowa, Kansas, and Nebraska, there's some really good stuff. Industry seems to think that the good areas will outweigh the bad areas, and that's where we have the fight on. I don't know if they can. The people I've been talking to in Iowa and Minnesota aren't talking record crops. They're talking very good crops. Last year in this central Illinois area and a lot of Illinois, we were well over 200, 250, 260, 240. I think in Iowa and Minnesota, a lot of them are talking 210, 220. I don't know if that can make up for the 50s and 60s and 80s we're going to have in some of the Illinois, Missouri, Ohio, and Indiana areas.
And their APHs in those areas would be similar to APHs in good areas of Illinois, right?
In general, yes. And, I mean, right here where we're at, farmer brought in stuff today. It's 14 to 16 rows around. It's tipping back 2.5 inches. It looks like he's going to have 25 in length, not 35.
Oh, well, that'll cut back the top end of what he's able to harvest. And what part of the
That was McLean County, and it was what they thought would be 200 bushel of corn. You bring that ear in, and it's already denting. I don't know if it can make 150. And that was his best corn.
Well, that makes for a whole new set of data points that producers and the trade will have to put in. Of course, USDA is out actively surveying now to find out what the crop looks like for August 12th. I suppose they'll catch some of those, and they get ear weights and all kinds of things to begin with. Not as much in this report as they do in the September, but we'll have a better idea once August 12th rolls around, I suppose.
Yeah, the people who have been out walking are a little bit shocked by what they're finding versus what they thought they would find. They thought they would find better than they're finding.
Indeed. Okay, thanks so much. Anything on the livestock before I let you go for today?
Oh, nicely up. Industry at the end of last week was pretty negative. Here we are. I think usage is really good, even though we have fairly good supply. But usage is really good, and nice bounce up today. And I think just lots of people wanting meat.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much, Pete.
Have a great one.
You too. Pete Manhart is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Remember, you can visit us online. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. And while you're there, please do take a look at what we have coming up. The calendar of events is listed, and there are many things on that calendar. The first one up is a Grain Marketing and Challenging Times event that's sponsored by U of I Extension. That is, I believe, the 13th day of August, and will be in Macon, DeWitt, and Piatt counties, and then we'll be up in Watseka. On Wednesday evening, the 19th, we'll be at the State Fairgrounds a couple of days, and we've got, of course, Agronomy Day coming up. That's on the 20th of this month. Right here on campus, and Farm Progress Show is the first, second, and third day of September, so it should be a really busy month. Check out what's on our website at willag.org and just hit the Will Ag calendar. You'll find out where we will be in that month's time frame. I hope to see you out and about. Here are a couple of agricultural news items for this Monday afternoon. The Waters of the United States, or WOTUS rule, is set to take effect on the 28th day of August. That's just 60 days after it was finalized, and now NPPC, that's the National Pork Producers Council, has joined the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, the Public Lands Council, the United Egg Producers, and the U.S. Poultry and Egg Association in calling on the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to postpone implementation of the regulation. The WOTUS rule is supposed to clarify the agency's authority under the Clean Water Act over various waters. Currently, that jurisdiction, based on several U.S. Supreme Court decisions, includes navigable waters and waters with a significant hydrologic connection to navigable waters. The new regulation would broaden that to include, among other water bodies, upstream waters and intermittent and ephemeral streams, such as the kind farmers use for drainage and irrigation. Let's stay with Washington politics, but we'll go to one of the last states to come into the union. Trade ministers from the United States and the 11 other countries in the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations meeting in Hawaii were close to concluding an agreement that could prove economically significant for U.S. pork producers. A final TPP agreement with a good outcome for U.S. pork could see exponential growth in U.S. pork exports to the TPP countries and generate some 10,000 U.S. jobs tied to pork exports. That, according to Iowa State University economist Dermont Hayes. The talks to seal the mega deal between the 12 nations, representing some 40% of the world's economy, broke down without agreement in Hawaii on Saturday. But again, that agreement is close. Those involved say all it needs are a few of the parties to give ground, think Canada, on a few of the sticking points, think dairy, and all 25 chapters of the TPP, they believe, are ready to go. The 12 ministers could meet again within a few weeks. And finally, this note on farming. Aquaculture is booming. As of 2012, the globe produced more farmed fish than beef worldwide, some 66 million tons. And it's being done in a lot cleaner way than it ever has before. In fact, according to a report from the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, aquaculture will grow by some 50% over the next 15 years. While fisheries will probably only grow by a couple million tons. That means by 2030, as many fish will be farmed as are caught, to the tune of some 90 million tons. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. You know, we've talked a lot about prevent plant acres this season, but do you know what you can do with them? Of course, those wet conditions have caused many farmers not to plant soybeans. University of Illinois Extension educator Mike Rogge from the Quincy area in western Illinois says farmers who have claimed prevent plant beans with their insurance can still use the treated seeds they have on hand.
We talk about use of cover crops on those prevent plant acres. And the idea of using treated soybean seed as a crop, as a cover crop for those prevent plant acres, just makes so much sense.
Rogge calls this a win-win for farmers and seed manufacturers. Rather than dumping treated seed, farmers can plant it to control weeds and reduce erosion. There are, however, some rules that apply.
You have to abide by several rules. One of those, you cannot harvest it for grain. And if you hay or graze it prior to November 1st, you lose some of the payment on those acres as well.
Prevent plant beans only pay out if they are hayed or grazed. If those beans used as a cover crop are harvested, the prevent plant will be voided. Well, we've talked about soybeans and we've talked about aquaculture and just a little bit about beef, but let's explore that topic a bit more. The nation's beef cow herd has started down the path of the largest expansion in 25 years. The last major expansion of the beef cattle herd in the United States took place in the early 1990s. Back then, it grew by 10% from 1990 to 1995. The industry tried to expand in the last half of the last decade, but that was abruptly stopped as drought spread through the southern plains while the price of feed skyrocketed. Now, with pastures and grassland restored for most of the country and the feeling that feed prices will remain moderate, the expansion, says Purdue Extension agricultural economist Chris Hurt, is off to a fast start.
Early indicators are for a rapid expansion. One way to measure the rate of expansion is to look at or calculate the number of beef heifers being retained as a percent of the beef cow herd. In the 1990 to 95 expansion, that number peaked a bit above 16%, but it remained at that rate for 3 years. In the most recent mid-year USDA update, that shows that the current expansion has already accelerated to the 16% rate. That is 16%, the heifer retention numbers are 16% of beef cow numbers.
While expansion on the new cattle production cycle is launched out of the gate, the real question for Chris Hurt is how long this growth will persist. It's a four-year-long horizon, he thinks, to answer, and depends on the continuation of many factors. In fact, the same factors that produce the start of the expansion.
So ultimately, abundant grass, low feed prices, record high cattle prices, and a rosy outlook combined to entice producers to really expand.
The heavy retention of heifers in the last year is one of the factors that reduced beef supplies and led to record high beef prices. Beef supplies were down about 6% in the last half of 2014 and about 4% in the first half of 2015. However, beef supplies are expected to shift toward growth in the second half of this year, with a 1% increase and by a more significant 4% in 2016.
However, now beef supplies are expected to shift towards growth in the second half of this year, with about a 1% increase in supplies and then a more significant 4% increase in beef supplies for 2016. Higher beef supplies in coming months and the sharp increases in pork and chicken supplies likely mean that the peak beef prices on this cycle have already passed. Peak monthly prices may have occurred back in November last fall when finished cattle prices averaged $170 per hundredweight, and the 500 to 550 pound Oklahoma steer calves averaged $303 per hundredweight.
Finished cattle prices dropped below year earlier prices in late June and continued to drop to $145 by the end of July. Obviously, says Hurt, lower finished cattle prices over the coming year will put pressure on calf prices. Overall, calf prices are expected to continue to provide profitable returns for cow-calf operations. However, the profit stimulus to expand cow numbers is not likely to be nearly as strong as it was in the past 12 months. For these reasons, the rapid movement toward beef cow expansion that has been experienced in the previous 12 months is likely to slow. This means the rapid rate of heifer retention may not continue through 2016. If so, the multi-year persistence of expansion experienced during the 1990 to 1995 era will likely be shorter-lived for this cycle. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, now let's take a look at what's been happening in the cash grain market. On the phone line is Greg Johnson for this Monday afternoon. He's at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
What have farmers been calling and asking about today?
Well, they certainly aren't calling in to sell anything. I think they're calling in to ask how much lower can this thing go before it turns around, and unfortunately, we don't have a good answer for that. I guess the good news we've got is because of the lower board price, we see the basis levels continue to improve. You know, we improved our cash corn bid by 4 cents today, but the problem is the futures were down 4 cents, so we're not making any headway when the futures go down just as fast, if not faster, than what the basis improves.
Is that for old crop and new crop both?
Just old crop corn. Old crop now we're paying the same price for old crop and new crop corn.
Oh, wow. And how wide is your basis?
We are paying option price, the September futures for old crop corn, and then 14 under December for new crop corn. So that works out to about the same price.
Okay. So if we're only 14 under, and how far normally under would you be in the midst of harvest?
Last year, we started the year at 25 under, and by the time harvest rolled around, we were 32 under. So 14 under reflects the poorer crop from central Illinois on east.
And would this be some place you think farmers might consider at least locking in the basis for fall delivery?
If they knew how much they were going to have, I think that's
there's always an if, isn't there?
Well, you know, I mean, if there's 200 bushel corn out there and you don't have room to store it, that's one thing. But if you only have 150 bushel corn and you can store everything, then you may not need to lock in basis. And so that's the question that still needs to be answered over the next 3 or 4 weeks as farmers walk those fields and find out what is or isn't there.
And have you heard, I know you heard my discussion earlier with Pete Manhart. Have you heard about anybody who's been out in the field and what they've pulled?
I have. I've heard some disappointing results, but I've also heard some good ones too. And so it's a little too early to say which one is the majority and which one is the minority, but I'm not going to be surprised with anybody's results this year. I think there's so much variability out there that we could see, you know, probably one of the widest ranges in yields, you know, from field to field and from county to county that we've ever seen.
This is likely to make it very difficult for USDA, for Pro Farmer, for anybody who's making runs through the fields to get a handle on the size of the corn crop, maybe even for the bean crop. We'll know that later in August, I suppose. What does it tell us, if anything, about marketing plans and how the size of the crop might change from August to October and October to January and to the end of the year once we get to September of next year?
Well, I two things that I would remind people. One, know what you have, and that way if the price does rally, like we saw that rally in June, you know what you've got to market and can take advantage of those rallies. I don't know that we're done with the market rallies. You know, I just don't think we've got it figured out yet. But two, don't get caught up in what you hear at other places, because depending on what part of the field somebody goes in, they may only find 150 bushel corn, but another part of the field might be 200 bushel corn. So know what you have, and then when you get a price that you think you can make money at, don't be afraid to sell it.
Any thoughts about the size of the soybean crop, at least in those areas that have had really rough conditions? Has the soybean managed to recover very much, do you suppose?
I don't think so. I think they always say beans are made in August, and so if we can get some good rains here in August, maybe they'll put some growth on, and maybe we can get to an average crop in those places, but that would be the best case scenario is average. I really think we're looking at below average yields in central Illinois on east.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Greg Johnson of the Andersons here on Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at Stewart-Peterson.com.
It's National Watermelon Day. It's also St. Lydia's Day, patron of clothes dryers. On this day in agricultural history in 1492, Christopher Columbus sailed from Spain on his first voyage to what he thought were the Indies. In 1801, Sir Joseph Paxton was born. Paxton was an English landscape gardener and a hothouse designer. He was the architect of the Crystal Palace at the Great Exhibition of 1851 in London. In 1806, Michael Addison was born. Addison was a French botanist who developed a system of plant classification based on physical characteristics. In 1811, Elisha Graves Otis was born. He invented the first safe elevator and opened the door to rooftop restaurants. His elevator featured an automatic safety brake, a spring-loaded bar that caught on the rails if the elevator cable broke. In 1914, the first ships passed through the Panama Canal. And in 1921, John McCready became the first person to crop dust from an airplane. He did it over a farm near Troy, Ohio, to kill an infestation of caterpillars. By the way, he also was a co-pilot on the first nonstop U.S. transcontinental flight in May of 1923. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's check now the numbers, or rather the weather forecast. That with Mark Russo. He's at Chesapeake Earth Risk Technologies in Chicago, Illinois, to talk about the weather forecast here in the Midwest. Mark, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. I know I was in your area, the Chicago area, yesterday. There was a really rough storm, a lot of wind, a lot of really torrential rains. I don't know how much that dropped. It's kind of a fast-growing, moving, ugly storm. And those are the kind of pop-up storms we've been having. Will we see those across the Midwest during the coming week?
We will, but primarily across the southern half of the Midwest, especially areas south of I-80 here. And now, again, it's not going to be like what we saw back earlier in July, or for that matter back in June, where you just had the widespread areas of a very heavy rainfall and the very frequent thunderstorm activity. It is going to be more active, but nothing tremendous here. And so overall here, it looks like when all is said and done, for most areas, it looks like rainfall will come in near normal over the next couple of weeks, but there will be some isolated areas, some swaths, again, primarily in the southern Midwest, that will pick up those heavier amounts.
So not a bad August, all in all. How would you characterize May, June, July for the growing conditions across the United States?
Well, overall, we've seen a bit more extremes in conditions here. That's been especially true on the precipitation front across much of the central and eastern U.S., and that's certainly been the bias here in precip trends, but overall there still have been some dry areas, and that includes portions of the southeast and on into the delta. But Midwest plains and northern plains have certainly been the most active areas. As far as temperatures are concerned, you know, not an extremely hot summer, but certainly a warmer one. A lot of that has been felt more on the minimum temperature side of things, and that's been associated with the high moisture content, higher dew points that's been associated with this kind of flow off the Pacific Ocean, and that is partly related to the warm sea surface temperatures and El Nino event going on right now.
The Delta region, if I remember correctly, got off to kind of a slow start. They were awfully wet. Conditions through their growing season, and it should be ending for corn really pretty soon, within the next couple, 2 or 3 weeks, have been what?
Yeah, they've certainly improved following the very wet conditions here. And, if anything, we saw yield declines here recently as a result of drier, hotter conditions that have resulted here over the past few weeks. And overall, July came in as a hotter than normal month, slightly drier than normal month, and especially in the southern parts of the Delta. That's continued here in early August. So overall, they've had some issues, not a big disaster or anything like that, but it's been far from ideal in the Delta states.
Thank you so much for taking the time. We'll talk with you in 1 week.
Sounds good, Todd. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mark Russo, of course, is with Earth Risk Technologies. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.